This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Glad to have you aboard today. First day of November. Thanks for being here. Louis DeBrusque coming up top of the second hour. From Hockey Night in Canada and the NHL on Sportsnet, we will get on the Edmonton Oilers page with Louis. Also, Ken Danico coming up bottom of the second hour from the NHL Network. And, of course, New Jersey Devils analyst. The Devils just handing it to the Columbus Blue Jackets on Sunday in advance of leaving to go to Finland for the part of the Global Series. They'll face off a pair of games against the defending Stanley Cup champions. And to Finland we go. We greet our man Mike Zeisberger from NHL.com in Finland, in Helsinki, ahead of the Global Series. Mike, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Jeff. I wanted to ask you, though, I mean, being across the ocean, how is the scorched earth in Leafland these days?
Well, as you know, Mike, having covered this team for as long as you have, there's no such thing as an 82-game season. It is 82 one-game seasons. So yep. you know that every single game, nay, every single period, is its own season. So right now, yes, this is Chicken Little and the sky is falling, and abandon everything and trade everything and fire everybody and start all over again like the Chicago Blackhawks or Arizona Coyotes, I suppose.
Well, you mentioned, Jeff, you mentioned Chicago. Isn't this just a situation of wash, rinse, repeat? Didn't we go through this last year before they had a comeback win in Chicago in like the third week of the season?
And that's why I don't think the organization is going to do anything. Like, we'll see. It's a tough week. They have the Flyers, who are playing much better, as you know. They have the Flyers on Wednesday, then the Boston Bruins, who might be the best team in the NHL right now, on Saturday. So it's a tough week, and I think the nerves are close to the skin everywhere, but I don't think the organization is going to rush into any type of panic move. I want to throw something back at you before we talk about this, because every time Mike and I get together, we're either talking about concerts we've been to together, or we're talking about hockey, or we're talking about Slapshot. And today we lost Andrew Duncan, who played, you know, the character Jim Carr here, who passed away today. Like, we're going to talk a little bit later on about, you know, some of the people from that 1977 Nancy Dowd movie that we've lost. But the Jim Carr character, you know, whether it was the bad toupee, to which I always ask, what's a good toupee? The bad toupee, the great lines, like all of it. When you think about that character specifically, Mike Zeisberger, what jumps to your mind?
What jumps to my mind is when he started introducing the Syracuse team before the final. And he starts going over like, oh, there's some lineup changes for Syracuse. And, of course, as you know, Jeff, my hockey idol is and always will be Ogie Oglethorpe. Every hockey pool that I have been in for decades is named after Ogie Oglethorpe. And I remember his intro. Oh, what a trying rookie season this young man has had. What with the deportation is to Canada and that country's refusal to accept him. One of the great lines in moviedom. It was great, you know, when they started bringing all these goons, and he's just, oh my. And that's what I remember of all. And of course, the bad weave and you are right. You know, what is a good toupee? And his certainly wasn't.
Yes. Lots to his friends and certainly to his family.
Yeah,
Andrew Duncan was a real talent and a Second City alum as well. Like, a really, outside of the Jim Carr role, which was outstanding, he was an outstanding actor, both comedic or otherwise. More on Andrew Duncan later on in the program. So, let's get to Columbus and Colorado, but first, set the scene for us. I've never been to Helsinki. I've never been to Finland. I would suspect many listeners and viewers right now's eyes haven't been either. Give us a sense of what you've found so far in the time you've been there, specifically anything relating to hockey culture.
Well, it's my first time being here. I've been to Sweden a handful of times, but had always wanted to get here. And Jeff, it's people are crazy about hockey here, and to the point of So they're in Helsinki for 2 or 3 days, and then Thursday morning they take a 90. Both teams are taking a 90-minute train ride to Tampere, where the games will be played Friday and Saturday. And look it, you know, that is where the games will be played. That is Patrick Laine's hometown. And I already heard, like, ticket prices are going through the roof. You know, Jarmo Kekäläinen and the Columbus Blue Jackets general manager, also a special time for him, being the first European general manager in the National Hockey League and then bringing his team back to Finland. But he says that, and, you know, you mentioned that we always like to talk about our rock, you know, rock shows and concerts. He says Laine is going to be a rock star when they get up there. People are just going bonkers about it. Like I said, prices are going through the roof. And Jarmo made a great point, Jeff, about how much people here love hockey. He told me the fact that, you know, when, and I know this, that this won't sit well with a lot of Canadians, but when back in the spring, the World Championships were in Tampere in this beautiful new arena where the two teams will be playing later this week. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Finland beat Canada in the gold medal game. Very, very dramatic finish. But he said there are 5 million people, approximately, that live in Finland. To watch that gold medal game, 2.5 million mm-hmm. people tuned in. So one out of every two
wow.
people that live in this country watch that gold medal game, okay? You know, mm-hmm. I think those – I'm not a big numbers guy, but, Jeff, I think in this case, the numbers tell the whole story.
That's around half. Oh, actually, Merrick, that is half. 2.5 to 5, yeah, that is half. That's incredible.
Yeah, isn't it? And that just shows you how crazy it's going to be when we get up there. And we already have seen it today. The two teams had non-publicized practice at a local rink here. And somehow,
that's
shockingly, these things sometimes get out. And there was no shortage of people waiting for the teams to go to the team buses when the practices were over.
It's like the Rolling Stones showing up at the Horseshoe once upon a time.
There you go.
This is the NHL Global Series, Friday and Saturday, Colorado facing off against Columbus. You mentioned Patrick Laine. You mentioned Jarmo Kekäläinen as well. I would imagine, you know, we haven't even mentioned anyone from the Colorado side, whether it's Mikko Rantanen, whether it's Arturi Lehkonen.
Yep.
First of all, I love that the NHL does this. I love taking NHL teams and putting them in other countries' hockey culture just to see, even just to see the honesty's eyes, even just to see the jerseys that show up in the stands and who they are, and whether it's, you know, the chanting and the singing and the scarves and the European sports culture brought to the NHL and the NHL aesthetic, or it's just like just a way to spread that brand around Europe. Like, you know, Elliot was talking a couple of weeks ago about the NHL, you know, looking to do, well, one thing he said was looking at Australia, which would be fantastic. But two, he said, you know, well, listen, don't be surprised if they end up going to Norway, which right away you think like, okay, so the Minnesota Wild are going for Matt Zuccarello.
Yep.
I just love this phenomenon just to see how NHL teams mix in with other European sports/hockey cultures. I know you said it's going to be nuts. How do you think it's going to be different? Like, that's the one thing that I'm always interested in. How's it going to be different than the NHL experience for these two squads?
Well, first of all, I want to just shoehorn a quick story in there before I answer your question. So if people haven't seen or read about this, the Avalanche pulled an outstanding prank on goalie Francouz on their way over here. So they were on their charter getting ready to leave New York. And I guess they were on the tarmac for about 4 hours because there was some mechanical situation. So Francouz is up there, you know, like in some of the charters or anybody that's been on a plane, you know, and which for me is, make a hard right, and then you look up to, when you get on the plane, you look up at the left at first class, and they have those places where people can actually stretch out and sleep. So there was Francouz He's got his headphones on. He's got his eye mask on. So an announcement is made that they're going to have to deplane because the mechanical issue cannot be fixed and they have to go to a different plane. So, you know, sources say that, you know, Nathan MacKinnon was one of the ringleaders. He got everybody off there and they kind of left Francouz on the plane. And according to one that on the first plane, according to one player, when the flight attendant kind of woke him up, he said, "Welcome to Finland." Meanwhile, they hadn't even left New York yet. So, you know what? I mean, you got to give it to them. That's a pretty good one. And for a team that's, you know, struggled a little bit coming into these games, not as much as you mentioned that Columbus is, but I mean, you want to take the edge off? That's a hell of a way to do it, and good on them.
And you know what? The fact that it's Nathan MacKinnon, like the interesting thing about MacKinnon is, you know, until he won, like I'll just be blunt with his eyes, until the Colorado Avalanche won the Stanley Cup, I didn't know that he had top teeth. I had never seen him smile before. He was always burning intensity, you know, really focused, you know, angry, pissed off at either himself or his team or the situation. He's just that driven guy. They win the Stanley Cup, you know, Elliot and I, you know, see him at the NHL Players Tour in Vegas, and he's laughing and he's joking. Yeah. Like, he's still the same dedicated athlete, but now all of a sudden it's like this enormous piano has been taken off of Nathan MacKinnon's back. So we can confirm that he does have top teeth. The minute he won the Stanley Cup, that was proven to us, and he's not above the odd practical joke on his teammates. So that is excellent, Zeiss.
Hey, listen, Jeff, here's the bottom line, okay? As you know, he's a native of Cole Harbour. So wouldn't you be a little peeved off if you kept going to Sidney Crosby's Cup parade and thinking, "Hey man, when do I get to share in these reindeer games?" And you know what? He finally had his moment in the sun, and good on him. And when we talk about competitiveness and we talk about the Cole Harbour boys, and I remember doing a story about this going into the final and talking to one of the coaches in Cole Harbour that runs summer skates. Can you imagine? It's Brad Marchand, Sidney Crosby, and Nathan MacKinnon all skating together in the summer. And, you know, the coach told me, he goes, you know, once it's over, they're the best of friends. But when it's on, even in the most simplest drills, all those guys are going full out to try to beat the other one. So there's a lot of inbred competitiveness there. I think you and I have talked about before that, you know, one of the things that makes Sidney Crosby who he is, and I don't necessarily think he still has the raw talent that maybe he had a decade ago, but nobody is more competitive than Sidney Crosby. And if you're Nate MacKinnon and you've been to some of these parades and you're best friends with this guy, your neighbors with them, you know, north of Halifax, you know, they have cottages side by each, you know, that's going to rub off on you. Like, I mean, because Sid's not going to back down. So you have to find a way to up him. And, you know, in this, you know, last June, I believe it was June 27th when he hoisted that cup over his head and got the monkey off his back. Hey, on that day, even though Sid wasn't playing, it was Nathan MacKinnon who bested Sidney Crosby and the rest of the NHL.
You know, it's so interesting too, because the year before, when at the Players Tour in Chicago, anytime we would try to bring up any of his accomplishments, this is, of course, pre-Stanley Cup, he'd stop the conversation and essentially say, "I haven't done anything. Let's stop now. Look what Sid's done. Look what this guy's done. I've done nothing." Yep. It's remarkable, because at times you can make the case that he's the best player in the world and he just won't hear any of it. And it sounds like he's just like, I mean, I get it. Like, winning makes you happy. Like, surprise. He seems like a much different guy. A couple of things before
Jeff,
we let you go and let you get on with your day. Yeah.
Sorry, just to interject real quick. How many times have you heard Sidney Crosby talk about himself when you start bringing up his numbers? I mean, it's they both sound the same when you try to do that. And I don't think it's any coincidence why. And I think that, you know, the reason one of the reasons that Nate doesn't talk about his own personal accomplishments is because Sid doesn't do it either.
You know what, though? I like how Leon Draisaitl handles it. Like in the NHL player, I think it was the NHL players poll where he was, you know, all the players said that, you know, he was the number one passer in the NHL. And when asked about it, he said, yeah, I expect that. And then he kind of goes, maybe I shouldn't say that. It's like, no, like be like, if you like, I want confident athletes. I'm pretty sure you want the same thing.
Yeah.
Like there is obviously the fine line between confident and cocky, but I have no problem with a player saying like, yeah, you know what? I think I'm going to the Hall of Fame now because Crosby is going to the Hockey Hall of Fame. I would have no problem if Crosby said, yeah, look what I'm done. I'm going to the Hall. I just need to serve my 3 years.
Listen, if you can take your verbal pliers and get Sid to say that, all power to you, Jeff.
Got about 90 seconds here. I don't know if that's enough to do this, but
yep.
Give us the Mike Zeisberger snapshot on both these two teams that we're going to see Friday, Saturday.
Well, I think you're going to see the Finnish players on both teams, whether it's Rantanen and Lehkonen for the Avs and Laine and Korpisalo. I think they're going to be pedal to the metal. You know, I'm not worried about the Avs too much, Jeff. I just think that, yeah, you know, there's too much skill there. The Jackets, you know, I had high hopes for them. I still think they're feeling their way. They're giving up way, way, way too many goals against. And if they don't tighten up, this is the last team you want to be playing when you're porous defensively. So that's the main thing that I'm going to be watching, other than the reaction of the fans.
Absolutely. We'll let you get on with your day. Zeiss, thanks for checking in from overseas, from Finland, sharing your expertise. And always, listen, but on a personal note, always great catching up with you, pal. You be well. Mike Zeisberger, ladies and gentlemen, from NHL.com. Thanks, Zeiss.
Thanks, Jeff. And by the way, saw a great Scorpions concert in Vegas a couple weeks ago. I'll end on that.
Did you see that? I listened to a podcast a couple of years ago about how, did you see this? I'll send you the podcast. It's a 5-part series about how, Winds of Change was actually created by the CIA as a way to weaken the Eastern Bloc during the Cold War. Have you heard that one?
Yes. And if that's the case, then the CIA is alive and well and in Vegas, because it was a hell of a show.
That's awesome, buddy. Dr. Zed, Mike Zeisberger from NHL.com. He comes, he goes. He comes with a story, some information, and a great reference to the Scorpions. By the way, speaking of Columbus, I know that I don't exactly think it's a secret that, and I don't know if they're actively looking for one, but I would imagine at some point this season, if this continues, like I understand the issue with the goaltending and the issue with the blue line as well. I just have a hard time believing that the Columbus Blue Jackets, with some outstanding wingers, some of the best in the game, when you think of, well, we just talked about Patrick Laine and we think of Johnny Gaudreau as well. I just have a hard time believing they're not actively, if not now, maybe soon, maybe a sometime, looking for another center. It just wouldn't shock me at all. Quick break. Step away for a couple of moments here. When we come back, hour two. Louis DeBrusque from Hockey Night in Canada and the NHL on Sportsnet will stop by. It is the Oilers and the Preds tonight, but we'll start the conversation off by looking back at a really great game on Saturday. Another installment of the Battle of Alberta. Also, Ken Danico stops by. Bottom of the hour from the NHL Network, New Jersey Devils analyst as well. Great to see him celebrated by the Devils at the Prudential Center before the Devils Columbus Blue Jackets game on Sunday. Ken Danico stops by. Also, Maddie and I will have a conversation about one of the great character actors and one of the great characters from the movie Slapshot, Andrew Duncan, who played Jim Carr, who passed away today. Merrick Show continues. Hour two is on the horizon. Keep it here.
Covering the Raptors in depth like no one else. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Welcome to Hour 2. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Ken Danico stops by. New Jersey Devils analyst. Great to see him celebrated before the Devils took on the Columbus Blue Jackets on Sunday. Ken also doing work for the NHL Network. We'll talk to him about tonight's matchup. It is the Vancouver Canucks facing off against the red-hot New Jersey Devils, led by, amongst other players, Jesper Bratt and Nico Hischier, who I still maintain there is a Selkie out there for Nico Hischier. Also, a little bit later, Maddie Marchese, my producer, and I will have a quick chat about, you know, losing one of the great character actors from the movie Slapshot today. Andrew Duncan, you may not know the name, but you know the character. He played Jim Carr in the movie The First Voice, and the first face that you saw in Slapshot is no longer with us. So we'll talk about that. In the meantime, we'll talk about the Oilers, who had, for my money, two of the best games I've seen all season in the same week. Louis DeBrusque from Hockey Night in Canada and the NHL on Sportsnet joins me now. Louis, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How you doing, bud? Been a while.
It has. It's great to hear your voice, my friend. And yeah, before we get
I got to tell you, I just brought up that scene from Slapshot the other day when we had that wild game in Chicago with the 17 penalties, and I said, the peanut vendors are getting involved. I said, my God, if we could get down there, we would get involved. And you know what? Jack and I were laughing about it because it was right out of that where there was stuff going on. Everybody was emotional, and it kind of reminded me of that. It's sad to hear that he passed away, and still a classic cult movie in our world, that's for sure.
Well, one of the questions has always been, and I'm no surprise that you and Jack were having a laugh about that one, because that is very on brand. I can see Jack doing the Jim Carr impression too right away.
Yeah.
I've always wondered, you know, because I can't remember when the first time I saw the movie was. I can't. You know, I've got two boys that are now getting into the ages where they, you know, might bump into the movie here and there.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about Jake. Was there a moment in Jake's life where you said, okay, son, you're ready to see Slapshot?
I was a big movie guy. So I had a ton of DVDs. Yeah. And before that I had boxes of VHS tapes. So, you know, it was definitely in that box. They had the ability to go and grab some of those VHSs. I honestly don't know when he first watched it. It wasn't one that I sat down and said, hey, watch this. Because let's face it, it is kind of an adult movie. And I know my wife was very strict about that growing up, about certain things the kids watch. So, but there's no question, as you talked about before, somewhere along the lines, he watched that movie with his friends. And the other one was Youngblood. You know, Youngblood's kind of the movie from our generation growing up. When I was a teenager, Racky, the old tough guy, and Rob Lowe obviously playing Dean Youngblood. But yeah, you know what? It's one of those movies that'll stand the test of time. And I've been fortunate enough to be at charity events with obviously the Hanson brothers and a few of the guys. You know, Dave. You know, Killer Dave. You know, I did an event with him in London one time, and we talked for hours at the table about filming that movie, and it was fascinating to me. I just sponged it up because it was so incredible. But it's part of us, you know. It's part of our upbringing and what we, the game that we love and watch. But I don't remember the first time I watched it either, Jeff. It's funny, but I watched it a lot. I know that almost every road trip we threw at some point in time, a junior.
I was going to say, traveling up and down the highways in Ontario playing for the London Knights, I'm sure that was on the bus here and there. The one thing that from Youngblood, and we've all seen the flick, whether you mentioned Rob Lowe or Cynthia Gibb, a couple of NHLers in that one, Steve Thomas, the late Peter Zezel. There's the one scene that's still to this day that I just howl at, Louis, and it's a tiny little thing, but I can't stop laughing at it. There's a scene when they're in the gym and they're all lifting, and they're wearing hockey pants. Did you ever lift wearing your hockey pants, Louis?
Never. Never, but I will say this. I've seen it. I have seen it. Yuri Slager. Yeah, and he was a guy that worked out on game day. He used to like to get the muscles going. And it was the weirdest thing. He would do squats on game day. He would do bench press, like heavy lifting. And he just felt it kind of stimulated the muscles and got things going. And sometimes he'd go in there and do stuff. Luke Richardson, if I'm not mistaken, too, and I'd have to check that with Luke. he might have been a guy that went in and did some stuff in half gear too, because he wanted to get the gear warmed up as well. Because you know how when the gear would dry out, it would almost get starchy. It would almost get to the point where you had to kind of get it wet again a little bit to kind of get it to move the right way. So I know the gear is a lot different nowadays, but back then, you know, the trainers were amazing at stitching up pads and socks and keeping things together for the duration of the year.
Wow. That's fantastic. These are great stories. And the Oilers are writing a great story this season. And for my money, Louis, the two best games that I've seen so far this year have both featured the Edmonton Oilers. Last week against the St. Louis Blues, I thought that was a dynamite game. And then Saturday against the Calgary Flames, the Battle of Alberta. Your thoughts, just quickly before we drill down to what we saw Saturday, your thoughts on what we saw last week from the Oilers. Two absolute beautiful hockey games.
They really were, and I thought it stemmed from the Saturday game, the afternoon game versus the St. Louis Blues, where they lost that one 2-0, and that was a good game too. That was the first game where I think they really tried to lock things down and play a patient, sound game. The way that they were playing last year. And listen, when you have the high-octane offensive potential that Edmonton has on a nightly basis, it's really hard sometimes to bring that back and say, listen, we have to play a structured game. We have to make sure we're doing it the right way, because they can get themselves out of trouble so easily at times, it seems. But I know for a fact that the core of this team understands that in order for them to win consistently and be a consistent team each and every year to try and fight for the Stanley Cup, that's the way you have to play the game. And it's something that they've really had to change. I don't think they get enough credit for that. I don't think that Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Darnell Nurse, these guys, you know, Zach Hyman's a guy that every single shift you're going to see him work that way. And that's why they brought him in and why he was such a key signing for this Edmonton team. This is how you want to play. This is how you want to work every day. Evander Kane, same thing. You come in here, this is how you have to play. You have to work hard. And I just think it rubs off on everybody else. When you see the top players of your team playing that way, everybody else has no choice but to buy in. Those were great hockey games. And the St. Louis Blues are a team that can really frustrate you. They're a team that plays that very well. They know how to play that. They've done it, and they've won with it. The core there, I believe there was eight players that had won the Cup in 19 that were in that first matchup on the Saturday afternoon. If you don't play that way, then you're going to be in a lot of trouble. And it brings the best out in teams. And I thought the 2-0 game, although it was a loss, there was some really positive things in that game. It was a power play goal by Torrey Krug early in the game. That was the 1-0 game-winning goal. And then they saw each other right away. Less than a week later, they were playing each other again. And that game was, you know, it was a playoff hockey game. And I know that's really early to say that, but it just had that feel to it where
100%.
You were going to have to work so hard for your opportunity, and the skill on both sides still created great opportunities. The goaltending was excellent both sides. Binnington was good for their side. Stuart Skinner was excellent for Edmonton. And I thought the Calgary game was exactly the same way, Jeff. You're right. I thought it was, and that's the first game I've been between the benches in a long time, so I missed a ton in that game because it was blowing by me so fast. There was no neutral zone. You turned the puck over there, and it was gone. Both teams were excellent at doing that, excellent at turning a puck over and instantly going back on the attack to push people back. It was fast, really fast.
Okay, so I'm gonna stretch on something here. Do you remember when Jake was really young and you'd go to the basement and play mini sticks with him, and you would get on your knees and you'd deke him out, and he'd be running all around you and you'd keep deking him out, and it's like a parent son or parent daughter moment, right?
Yep.
Did you not get did that thought not, or that memory not hit your head right away in that St. Louis game when you saw Leon Draisaitl on his knees deking out Robert Thomas? Did you not go back to the DeBrusque basement with you and Jake?
It was incredible, you know, but it kind of was like that, wasn't it? Mini hockey, you shorten up, and he did it fluid. Like, there was no hesitation. It was almost like, yeah, no problem, I'll just make a play, no big deal, backhand sauce. But he's an extremely talented player, and I think that he can do a lot of different things like that, especially with that big paddle. But you're right. You know, I think that everybody at one point in time, especially if you've played this game, has played mini sticks, has used a long stick and had to choke up on it and use it in that way, or take a smaller stick that was the one available and use it. And, yeah, amazing skill. And that's the other thing, too. you know, like I said, it's been a couple of years since I've been between the benches in that building, and it's a great location. It's such a wonderful spot to kind of take things in. But I think the game's even gotten faster, Jeff. I mean, we kind of lose sight of that sometimes when we're up in the press box, we're watching the game on TV. There's nothing like being close to ice and watching how fast these guys are skating and what they can do at those speeds.
I wonder too if it's just because when I watch back to back, and again, this is all sort of anecdotal, and this is just what my eyes are seeing, and maybe I'm biased towards it, but it seems to me like the Western Conference moves quicker than the Eastern Conference. And again, this might just be my eyeballs, I don't know, but it seems like to your point, to me it seems like the Western Conference is faster than it's ever been. And faster than the Eastern Conference. Like, I'll watch an Eastern Conference 7 p.m. Eastern game, and then I'll tune in to watch a Western Conference game at 10 bells, and whoa, it's like these guys are flying in the West.
Isn't it amazing how with the perception of that, it's always been that way, too. I always remember the West when I came here, you know, back in early 90s, it was the run and gun, right? It was wide open. The Oilers kind of at that time, I think, set the tone for that for years to come, the way they played the game. Then the trap system came in, the New Jersey Devils in the East, you know, is the team that I always think of, you know, was the team that, yes, they won cups playing that stingy of a system with that defensive structure that they had. And then the hybrid started to morph. And then now I think you're right. I do believe that some of the teams, especially teams that have the ability to play fast, just are going away from that type of a system because they understand they can pressure so effectively with speed. But I will say this, the New Jersey Devils, I heard you talk about Ken Danico, and it was great to see him honored the other night. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah,
I was watching that game.
Awesome.
And, you know, he's such a character, and I had a couple scraps with him. It was really funny. I got a stick in the face. Tommy Albeline stuck me in the face, and I turned around and cross-checked him pretty viciously. And Dano, obviously being his D partner, came right over and grabbed me, and we had the first of two fights in that game. And, you know, he kind of grabbed me and literally almost like calf roped me, just kind of threw me down like I was nothing. I was like, geez, this guy is still pretty strong, you know, for a lot of years older than me. And then at the end of the game, we were losing so bad, I just went out there and I fought him again. And same thing, he was just so strong. He kind of tied me up and controlled me. And I was like, he had me on the ground. And he says to me, would you come after me a sec? I said, I don't know. I said, I was just mad for losing. He's like, I get it. No big deal. He was such an honest, tough guy that way. You know, he was so hard-nosed, but I always remember that because he was one of the first guys that just kind of was just so nonchalant about it. But he's a legend there. He's been there forever, and it was nice to see that. But that's a different team now. That team is no trap team. I'll tell you what, they're fast, they're aggressive, they've got guys that can wheel, and they're exciting to watch. They're a team that I think I need to give a little more respect to because they've got some extremely talented young players on that team.
All they've needed is a save. Like you look at last season, that was a really good team that just got undone by, I'll just be blunt, by questionable goaltending.
Yep.
Like
yep.
Other than that, like that was a really good, and I know they had some health issues. I know the hospital bracelet, et cetera. But other than that, like that was a good team that just could not get a save. Speaking of saves, should we get comfy with the idea that Stuart Skinner is Edmonton's number one netminder now?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't think they're ready to pass that title over to him here, but amazing starts for him, and I think it's a real big step in his development. And sorry for the Zamboni coming on the ice here. The Edmonton Oilers just finished up their morning skate here.
No problem.
And the Predators are going to go on soon here. But you know what? Good on him. He's been in the system for a long time. He's worked with Dustin Schwartz for years. He's put the time in. He really worked on his movement this summer. I had a good conversation with him the other day. That was a big focal point. He was a goaltender that's so athletic that he would get himself out of position. He would explode through and blow himself out of that line and out of that positioning. So he really wanted to work on his edge work, how to stop, how to keep himself in that line. And if you look at the scrambles that he had, and especially in the two games you were talking about, the St. Louis Blues last week and then the Flames on Saturday, there was a ton of goalmouth scrambles in front of Stuart Skinner. And he's really gotten good at just staying in that battle and being there. Positionally sound, he's a big guy, but his reactions were excellent. And I think that's a real improvement. But this is a perfect situation for me, Jeff, I think. You've got Jack Campbell coming in here, signed the long-term deal. He's your number one. He's going to get the lion's share of starts. But he hasn't had the greatest start to the season, but he still has four wins. So he's gotten run support, and they figured out a way. And there will come a time when Jack Campbell's going to have to bail the team out. It's inevitable. That's going to happen. And I have no doubt he's going to be there when that time comes. But for Stuart Skinner to come in, take the responsibility a little bit off of Jack Campbell, push him a little bit. They have a great working relationship, by the way. I mean, excellent. Dustin Schwartz says they want it to be a group thing. Every single meeting, both goalies are in there. It's not individual. They're doing it together. They're feeding off of one another. It's a younger goaltender that's coming up trying to find that way with an experienced older guy. It's just a great dimension to have, and especially the fact that they both understand it's for the team. I think that you can't ask for anything more in that regard. But I really like Stuart Skinner. I think he's a great kid. I think he's put the work in. He's always been a top, top prospect since he started playing in Lethbridge at a very early age. And I think maybe over the course of time there, you know, you start to get, I don't want to say, he played a lot of junior, you know. So by the end of it, he did win a championship. He won the WHL championship with Swift Current. Yep. So, I mean, he you know, he finally got to that point on a good team, and he showed that he was the guy when he won that championship. And I think the future is very bright for him. But I love the way Edmonton has just allowed him to develop, haven't rushed him in too aggressively into bad situations. They gave him two very tough starts, and he won both of them. And that's just another big step in his development. But no, I don't think they're ready to hand that over. But listen, I've seen stranger things, but I think right now they're happy with the dimension they have in goaltending.
What do we look for tonight? We'll leave on this one. It's Nashville. It's Edmonton. Nashville is a fascinating team again. What do we look for in this game tonight, Louis?
Well, you know, I look at this Nashville team as a team that I think is just about to break out and about to find their game. They haven't yet. They've had some tough losses, close games. And, you know, I don't think you can look at their record. You know, I know I believe it's 6-7 they've lost coming in here tonight. They lost 5 in a row, then they won a game, then they lost last game.
Yeah.
They're going to be a motivated, hungry team. Anytime you deal with a team that's had a start the way the Nashville Predators have, with the talent they have on this team and the back end they have, when you look at they have a real nice dimension where they have an older defenseman with a younger defenseman, which creates a real solid pairing in all three groups, in my opinion. And then you've got some forwards up top that, you know, there are elite players in the game. 240 goal scorers last year in Forsberg and Duchesne. Duchesne sets the record with 43 goals. I mean, and they were fighting right to the end to see who was going to have that goal tally, right? To the last game, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So for Edmonton, my philosophy is this. This team has given up some early goals. They've gotten behind in games. And Edmonton has struggled with that early on in this season as well. The start will be incredibly important, as I know that's cliche, but more so in this game. And I think they just need to keep the pressure on this team, because if you allow them to settle in and allow them to start to find some confidence and play their game, this is a very hard-nosed, physical team that can take it to you, and they will. I think Edmonton has to try and maintain the fact that they're still trying to find their game. Don't let them find it against you.
Should be a good one. It's Oilers and Predators tonight on Sportsnet 1, 9 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock local time. Always a great conversation. Thanks for sharing a lot of stuff there. Talk about Jake, talk about Slapshot the movie, Andrew Duncan, great stories, the Oilers, Deacon out, players on your knees. Always full value, pal. Great to hear your voice. You be well.
You too, Jeff. Thanks, bud.
There he is, Louis DeBrusque from the NHL on Sportsnet and from Hockey Night in Canada as well. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Ken Danico, New Jersey Devils analyst, does work on the NHL Network as well, Stanley Cup champion, celebrated on Sunday at the Prudential Center for 40 years with the New Jersey Devils as both a player and a broadcaster. That was so awesome, seeing him, his wife, the kids, everybody on the ice. It was great to see Danico celebrated that way. We'll talk to him at the bottom of the hour. Look forward to that conversation. In the meantime, Matt Marchese, I'm getting old, and I say that every time someone from the movie Slapshot passes away. Today, the hockey world loses a great character actor from a wonderful movie that you probably could make today, ladies and gentlemen, very much a period piece, from 1977, the movie written by Nancy Dowd, Slapshot. Andrew Duncan, who played Jim Carr, passes away today. Your thoughts on this one, Matty? Let's get into the slap. By the way, I really did, and I don't know if you've read this, The Making of Slapshot. I really wanted to try to find, I've got the book around the house somewhere. It's not behind me. It's called The Making of Slapshot by Jonathan Jackson. And the fact that I can't find it either here or in the upstairs library means I've probably lent it out and I've forgotten who I loaned it to. I don't know if you do that too, and people just randomly hand you books like, oh, you lent this to me? Like, oh yeah, forgot about that. I'm sure my copy of it is out there, so I'm gonna have to buy another one, and that's fine. That's totally fine. But I wanted to show that for those watching on 360, because it's an outstanding book. It's called The Making of Slapshot. Jonathan Jackson just did impeccable work getting cobbling together all the behind the scenes of what went in to making this seminal 1977 movie. Anyhow, your thoughts on Andrew Duncan Matty?
Yeah, the character was just so good because he just really tied everything together. It when, you know, being the play-by-play guy and then the interview with Denny Lemieux and just the things that he would say, like, especially at the beginning because the Chiefs were so bad. And you could tell just in the way that the character was like, this was a haul for him too, to try and do this job until they got really good. We actually have just a little montage of Andrew Duncan as Jim Carr. So if Lance, if you're ready, we can roll with that clip here.
Hi, Jim Carr again. Dennis, I know that some in our audience don't know the finer points of hockey. Could you tell them, for example, what is icing?
Well, icing happen when the puck come down, bang, you know, before the other guys, nobody there, you know. Mm-hmm. My arm go comes out, then the game stop, then start up.
Oh, gee. Hold the phone. Oh, this is an unscheduled surprise. It's him. This young man has had a very trying rookie season. What with the litigation, the notoriety, his subsequent deportation to Canada, and that country's refusal to accept him. Well, I guess that's more than most 21-year-olds could handle.
Ogilter.
Ogie Oglethorpe.
You know what the nice little touch is there? It's one of those movies where, and you know this, Maddie, anyone who's watched it countless times knows this, the more you watch it, and I really hope Ken Reed is listening or watching right now, because Reader's probably seen it more than anybody that I know. There's little tiny touches that the more you watch it, the more you pick up on. And in that opening scene, he's talking to Denis Lemieux, who's, of course, a netminder from the province of Quebec, French-Canadian netminder. And because this is happening in Charlestown, not in Quebec, he's Dennis Lemieux, not Denis Lemieux, because not going to capture that. It's Dennis Lemieux. Maddie, it's tiny things like that that are sprinkled into this movie, like, I don't know, pepper and parsley on the soup, that just make this thing such a, and I think a lot of it is because, like, honestly, Nancy Dowd wrote this thing, and a lot of it, the conversations came from her brother Ned Dowd, who we think of was one of the producers for Last of the Mohicans, that wonderful movie. He was a minor pro player, and he would bring his tape recorder to the dressing room and just hit record and record conversations that all the guys had, send them all to Nancy, and she cobbled together this movie. All the dialogue, all of it was all put together by Nancy Dowd. And there's tiny little touches like that, Maddie, all the way through the film.
There is. And the comedic aspect of it, the realism of playing minor pro hockey in small arenas and riding the buses and everything that's in between. And it's wrapped up very nicely. It's a long movie. I remember watching it a few years ago and not remembering how long it actually was and going, oh my God, like I can't believe that I sat there this many times watching it. But it's one of those movies that if you played hockey and were on the buses, that it was on almost every time. Like, I'm not even kidding. My coach in junior was like, he loved Slapshot. Like, he called every bus driver that we had Walt. Everyone, it didn't matter what their name was, he called them Walt. So we continued on that trend. We watched it so many times that one of the players on the team, he does the whole reenactment of the fashion show while it was happening in the movie. Good. It was absolutely fantastic. And it's one of those movies that, you know, And I just got a text from one of my buddies that played with me. He says he's dying right now thinking about those trips and the, calling the bus driver Walt. But we always, it was just, it's part of, you know, growing up as a hockey player, basically. It's like a rite of passage. Once you get to watch Slapshot, you're like, oh, okay, now I get what all these references are about. I get all that. And I mean, I think I was 8 years old when I watched it. And it was because my mom wasn't home.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that 8 years young? Old. It was a day that the moms were out and the dads were in charge. So I think there was four of us. And our dads were at my parents' place. One of the other fathers brought it over and we watched it. We were 8 years old. Probably a mistake on their part, but it was pretty amazing.
An 8 year old watching Mo. Oh, that's just wonderful. Because every team's got the one skin dog. That really goes far. You know, I mean, how many times, speaking of Walt, how many times did you break something and say, I'm making it look mean? How many times have you said that in your life as a guy that's watched? I know. So there's a few people that we've lost from this movie. And I just wrote a couple of them down. I'm sure I'm missing on some of them as well. I mean, Paul Newman, Reggie Dunlop is certainly the big one, the star of the film. You know, there was, I remember I spoke to Nancy Dowd once. This is when I was doing the original Leafs Lunch radio program when it was on 640 before co-opted by the other sports station in town. And we used to do this thing where every Thursday we talked to someone from the movie Slapshot. And Nancy Dowd, who I'm still dying to talk to again, we were talking about casting that role. And Paul Newman is perfect in the role. Paul Newman is ideal as Reggie Dunlop, to the point where you can't see anyone else playing that role. And she said there was one actor who was relentless, who would call her nonstop, because the scripts go out, right, to various agents, and then they send them to their clients and, you know, people sort of, you know, lobby for the role. She said there was one guy who wouldn't stop calling her for the role. And do you know who that now famous actor was?
I do know who it is because you've told me this off the air. Or at least I think I remember who it was. And I believe it was Al Pacino.
Al Pacino. I cannot imagine Al Pacino as Reggie Dunlop. It would just be a completely different character, and Paul Newman was so perfect. So Newman, no longer with us. Brad Sullivan, who played Mo. Now, Brad was interesting. I interviewed him once, and he said he was always, like, later on in life, he became a man of the Lord, and he was very, he said, embarrassed by the role, and didn't like it, and, you know, really was sort of sheepish about talking about it. He said, there was only one day where it really paid off for me. And I said, when was that? And he said, he was coming home. It was a Friday evening. He was coming back from church, going to his apartment in Manhattan. And he was walking through Central Park, and he really had to have a squirt. And so he pulled up next to a tree and was having a whiz. And he got the tap on the shoulder from two police officers. And one of them started to write him up and we're going to give him a ticket. And the other cop goes, hey, wait a minute. Aren't you Mo from Slapshot? Hey, put that ticket away. It's Mo. He said that was the only time that it really ever paid off for him. So we lost him a number of years ago. Matthew Cowles, who played Charlie, no longer with us. Joe Nolan, who played Clarence Swamptown Buffalo. Louise Arders, one half of the Sparkle Twins. Larry Block, who was referee Snyder, the clean game guy. So there's still plenty that are still amongst us and with us from that movie. I live in Stouffville. So does Guido Tenessi, who played Billy, as he was called in the fashion show, Charles Boy, Billy Charlebois. He works at Betts Pools here in Stouffville. Chris Murney, who was netminder Hanrahan, right? You remember Hanrahan?
Of
you know
course.
What he went on? His main claim to fame afterwards. This is great. He was the voice of Chester the Cheetah from the Cheetos commercials. you know how much money Chris Murney would have made from being the voice of Chester the Cheetah from the Cheetos commercials? But the one that I've always wanted to talk to more, just because he's my favorite character from the movie, is Alan Nichols, who played Johnny Upton, who was the captain of the team, whose grandfather, by the way, here you go, stick this one in your hip pocket. His grandfather was a guy by the name of Riley Hearn. So Riley Hearn was one of the greatest goaltenders who ever lived, and I'm going to go out on a limb with this one. I think he was the first goaltender to ever win the Stanley Cup. He went on to officiate in the NHL, and I think he was a goal judge in the NHL as well. I want to say he passed away in like the 30s or maybe the 40s, but that's Alan Nichols' grandfather, who I believe is retired and living in Montreal. That's someone when you want to do one of those like hunt down who Jeffy really wants to talk to, Maddie, is my producer. Find me Alan Nichols. That's the guy.
All right.
Final thought on the passing of Andrew Duncan before we go to break, and welcome in Ken Danico.
Yeah, just a great. The character, like I said, was just so perfect, and the way that he played that character and tied everything together was just so amazing. And he was funny. Like he was funny and unintentionally funny, which I think was the best part.
The peanut vendors are standing up to them. So good. Our condolences to the friends and family of Andrew Duncan. We'll step away. We'll come back with Ken Danico, someone who I'm sure has certainly seen the movie. Maybe he has a favorite character as well. Celebrated on the weekend at the Prudential Center on Sunday before the Columbus game on his 40th year with the Devils as both a player and broadcaster. The great Ken Danico on the Merrick Show in moments. You're listening across the Sportsnet Radio Network, watching on Sportsnet 360. Back in a moment.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Toronto sports fans. The Fan Morning Show with Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. I want to thank Louis DeBrusque for stopping by a couple of moments ago. We turn our attention now to one of our favorites. Not only is he a favorite around New Jersey with the Devils and their fans, but a favorite around the NHL. He is Ken Danico, who was celebrated Sunday at the Prudential Center, 40 years with the Devils as both a player and a broadcaster, this in advance of his Devils tilting the rink against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Ken, thanks so much for doing this. How are you today?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you?
I am very well. Before we get into this and talk about your career a little bit and talk about the New Jersey Devils facing off against Vancouver this evening, was just talking to Louis DeBrusque a second ago before you came on, and your name came up. Louis was like, "Hey, I heard you have Ken Danico coming up. I got a story for you." So indulge me for a second, Ken. I'm going to play this for you and see if you have any recollections of this moment or just maybe a thought on Louis. This is Louis DeBrusque,
my
famous exchange here. Here we go, Ken. Listen to this one.
But I will say this. The New Jersey Devils, I heard you talk about Ken Danico, and it was great to see him honored the other night. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah,
I was watching that game.
Awesome.
And, you know, he's such a character, and I had a couple scraps with him. It was really funny. I got a stick in the face. Tommy Albeline stuck me in the face, and I turned around and cross-checked him pretty viciously. And Dano, obviously being his D partner, came right over and grabbed me, and we had the first of two fights in that game. And, you know, he kind of grabbed me and literally almost like calf roped me, just kind of threw me down like I was nothing. I was like, geez, this guy is still pretty strong, you know, for a lot of years older than me. And then at the end of the game, we were losing so bad, I just went out there and I fought him again. And same thing. He was just so strong. He kind of tied me up and controlled me. And I was like, he had me on the ground. And he says to me, "Would you come after me a sec?" I said, "I don't know." I said, I was just mad for losing. He's like, "I get it. No big deal." He was such an honest, tough guy that way. You know, he was so hard-nosed, but I always remember that because he was one of the first guys that just kind of was just so nonchalant about it. But he's a legend there. He's been there forever, and it was nice to see that.
Ken Danico, do you have any memories of calf roping Louis DeBrusque?
Oh, boy. Well, first off, I appreciate the kind words from Louis. He's a character as well, and one of the good guys for sure. Does an unbelievable job in the booth listening to him over the years. Very knowledgeable and hockey IQ and all those good things that you need to be a good broadcaster. But I don't want to fight Louis DeBrusque twice in one game too often. Yeah, it happened. I was protecting Tommy Abilene the first time around, and then that's Louis didn't like the way it went because I guess I did chaff rope him a little bit, and he came right at me again out of the box. And obviously, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer. I obliged him, but it was a different. he was a tough character. I mean, he had some legendary scraps. And like I said, after the first one went okay, I'm like, oh no, he's going to be frothing coming at me. And I think he was too frothing, and he kind of lost his composure. And maybe that's why we kind of went to the ice again with a couple of punches thrown. But like I said, I didn't want to do that too often because I was a little, I fought a lot early in my career, the first 5 years or so. And then we got bigger, we got tougher. Lou Lamoriello surrounded us with some guys. In my early 80s, Jeff, I'll tell you, we used to go down to Philadelphia on that bus down the turnpike, and you could hear a pin drop every time. And I was one of the only guys really that we had to maybe battle some of their guys, along with Joe Cirella, who I had a lot of respect for. And we'd always sit in the bus beside each other and go, we'd look at each other, I go, Joe, well, who do we got tonight? Because, we're going to have to go Brown, Berube, Cochran, one of those guys. So pick your poison. But we weren't too anxious about that until Lou reinforced our physical aspect when he came to the organization. And then I got to fight the fourth or fifth toughest guy after that. I was pretty pumped about that, Jeff. But thank you to Lou. He's a great guy.
He sure is. Kind to Louie. I appreciate it. You're one of the great guys of the game, and Sunday was so special. I want to get to the game itself, but Margaret's out there, your wife, Taylor, Shane, it's just such a beautiful afternoon, rather, celebrating 40 years as a Devils player, as a Devils broadcaster. A lot of names and a lot of images flash at people when you say New Jersey Devils, and you're right up at the top of that list. Like you've become synonymous with that logo, both on the ice, behind the microphone, around the organization. I'll open the floor to you, Ken. What has that organization meant to you and your entire family?
Oh boy. Well, first off, I was humbled and honored, and I didn't really expect them to do this. They had approached me probably only 3 weeks ago, a month ago, and says, we want to have a night for you. You've been here a long time. And I go, that means I'm just getting older, but 40 years, man, as they say, it certainly flies by. And I've played with some legendary Hall of Fame players, and certainly I'm very grateful for that and to win some cups with these guys, the Brothers, Stevens, Niedermeyers, Eliashes. You can go on down the list. But you know what? I think the correlation I have here in New Jersey, obviously I was drafted the original year in 82. When the game was played, I mentioned a little more intimidating. And, we were a bad team, and we had to get some respect. And I was one of those guys that always wanted to be part of the answer, part of the solution in my small way. I knew my skill level. I knew where I was at, but I was going to bring an attitude. And that was something the fans, I think, can really relate to because they're blue collar here in our state. I love it here. Like I said, been here a long time. I made it my home the first day I played for the New Jersey Devils because I wanted to embrace the community. And I'm a lucky guy. And the first thing I thought of when they were honoring me, I said, they better win that game and not lay a dud, because if they do, the fans are going to blame me and turn on me. And all that's going to change. And boy, they didn't disappoint. That was as important to me as anything was how the team did. But, everybody knows I wear a Devils logo tattooed to my heart. This team gave me my opportunity to fulfill a dream, Jeff, and to go from where we were at, winning 17 games a year in the early 80s, to being able to win 3 Stanley Cup championships. And usually you're traded by that time when you become good. And I was just grateful that they stuck with me through thick and thin, and I got to be – got to be part of that. So it was a real special afternoon. They surprised me with a couple of things. I never got a silver stick for my 1,000th game. They had heard that, so they kind of commemorated that and put the 40 years in the 1,000 games. It was pretty cool, and my wife surprised me with that. I didn't know that was coming. And then my son, who graduated the Berklee College of Music in Boston, he's a singer, totally different life than I have. He's been into the arts and the acting and singing since as long as I can remember, since he was 6 years old, and he's doing great, just graduated. And he came out and sang the anthem, and that was the best part, because you know what family's all about. And it made it really special, and I was proud of him. He did a great job.
I got kids too, Ken. I know exactly the feeling. Absolutely. You mentioned the team not laying an egg, and that was probably, you know, on Sunday, as tilted a game as we've seen in the NHL this season. I know people are sick of hearing me go on and on about Nico Hischier, but again, another command performance by Nico Hischier. Jesper Bratt taking his game to the proverbial next level. And he's due probably a whopper of a contract at the end of all of this, at the end of the season. This is a team that right now, and we'll see against Vancouver tonight, that has really, Ken, you're starting to see it really hit. You've started to see the beginnings of this over the last couple of seasons, but it seemed to really hit like a new level on Sunday as they just, like, and this is against an NHL team. Like, whatever they wanted to do against Columbus, they did on Sunday. Your thoughts on that performance and the performances we've seen from the Devils this season?
Yeah, it's been real nice. It's the early going here, Jeff, but certainly they had to get better. They had to improve, and they'll lose their first two games of the year, but everybody wants to, you know, and I look at it as well, and you balance it out, the metrics, and they were pretty dominating even in their losses in their favor. So you'd think eventually you have to win some of these games, right? They didn't finish enough early on. The goaltending wasn't great early on. Well, all that's been kind of rectified. These young guys are really starting to develop, the 3-, 4-, 5-year guys, the Bratts, the Hischiers that you mentioned, Jack Hughes, Sharon Goetz. They have a really nice balance of Dawson Mercer, who's just all hockey, man. I love his game. And they've got guys that starting to believe. If you don't have a belief, you can't win. And they were always waiting for the other shoe to drop the last couple of years. It never materializes as quick as you want. We thought it might be last year that they'd start to develop. We thought it might be the year before. And yes, I put this in perspective. It's still the early going, but there is a different feeling, no question, around the organization. These guys are, it's the compete. I mean, we use those terms in hockey and everything else. It wasn't there in the past, not enough on a consistent basis. But when you get belief and now you're getting results, these guys believe they can win. And I love that you brought up, you know, you're a hockey guy through and through for so many years and understand the little nuances and little part of the game. And everybody's looking at Nico Hischier because he was number one overall pick. Oh, well, what's he done? He had 60-point season. That's it. The guy is a two. If you watch him on a nightly basis, and I have, and this is the best he's played in his career these first nine games here. But he is a Selke Trophy-type player that now he's getting rewarded offensively because you can see his confidence has grown in that aspect as well. And that's why the C was put on him, and that's why he's growing into a really good leader because of how he prepares himself, how he works every night. He's a defenseman's dream out there. He's always in the right spot in all three zones, and those are things I really watch, play away from the puck and, you know, he's valuable. If he goes 5 games and only has an assist, well, he's doing something else. He was 16 of 17 in the faceoff circle. I believe it was against the Avalanche in that 1-0 tight game. So he just does all the little things, and he's starting to play great along with a lot of guys. And I will tell you where the biggest improvement is the defense. I mean, we talked about they're a fast team. We've been saying this for years. But if you can't get the puck to them, speed means moving the puck on the stick, 5 to 7 foot passes. They've been able to do that and get it in the hands of the forwards, and that's how they've really attacked teams and backed them off and been able to create offense because the defense are playing so sound, so solid. And I will tell you, Jeff, and I'll leave it at this, and you can comment, but John Marino is above and beyond better than we expected in the early going. He has just made a world of difference on the back end. He has played so well, so a great gap, mobile, can join the attack, but it's just given us a completely different dimension, and everybody else has kind of played well around him. But this top, the 60 they put out every night, it's a difference now because it's not like, oh, no, what's going to happen? They can put any pairing out against any line, and they feel pretty comfortable that these guys are going to defend the way you're supposed to.
No doubt Marino's been outstanding. I'll just be blunt. Like, I've looked at the New Jersey Devils, and most specifically last season, and to your point of, you know, we've seen this, you know, starting to come together. I looked at the Devils last season, and I said, this is a really good team. They just need a save. Like, if they get some saves, like, this is a really good team that's going to compete for a, like, I don't know if I'm oversimplifying things, but I saw a really good New Jersey Devils team last season that just couldn't get a save, Ken.
When you're at the bottom of the league in those categories, and they were in save percentage and saves above expected, they were at the bottom, obviously, in a lot of areas. They used seven goaltenders. Injuries was a big part of that. I hate beating up on guys. They're trying out there, and the goaltending just couldn't get it done. But, yes, they had to use guys that obviously weren't number one goaltenders in the National Hockey League, or, in fact, on the bubble of even being National Hockey League goaltenders. It makes it difficult. They had their moments. They played well at times. But if you don't get consistency, and you look around the league, Jeff, there's so many teams that can say it, right? It doesn't matter how well you play, and it is that simplified. Goaltending's 50% of it or more, and you just have to make the timely saves. Now, lately, Blackwood had a three-game win streak that he made the saves he had to. Now Vanacek's come in, and he's made the saves he had to after a slow start for both those guys. They don't get a lot of shots. They don't get a lot of grade-A chances against them. They're at the top of the charts in that as far as shots against and shots for and the dangerous scoring areas, all those metrics. But he's made big – how important is it to make big saves at 0-0 and 1-1, where it changes the whole dynamic complexion of a game and how your team plays and how the opposition plays, whether it's on your heels or toes or tentative – whatever it may be, they've been able to do that, and that's what the Devils are hoping can remain consistent.
Got about 60 seconds here, Ken. What can you tell us about tonight's matchup against the Vancouver Canucks? I think there's, you know, probably on the blue line specifically, probably some envy. If you're Vancouver and you've been trying to redo your defense for a while, you look over at New Jersey and you say, how do we get that here in Vancouver? Your thoughts on tonight's matchup?
Well, look, we know Vancouver's going to be desperate. They've been playing much better as of late, for sure. We know that. And they've been a little banged up at times. I get it. But it's I've always said, look, the game's transition. You want puck-moving defensemen. That's why they signed Dougie Hamilton and the guy that can sustain offense. And he's done a good job this season. Damon Severs can also bring some offense. But you got to be able to defend. You got to be able to move the puck. You've got to be able to read situations and have a good stick. And that's what the Devils have finally found a little bit. And I guess for Vancouver's D, it's simple. They got a dynamic player in Quinn Hughes, but it's who you surround them with. It's not always the flashy guys. I know the games change. More it changes, more it stays the same. You still need a balance on the back end, and probably they need a little more balance. But this should be a tough test for the Devils because they're trying to right the ship. They're a good team. They got a lot of good players, and they're starting to come around coming off a 5-1 win against the Pittsburgh Penguins. So it'll be interesting to see how the Devils start out west.
Be Lindy Ruff versus Bruce Boudreau tonight. It is the Vancouver Canucks and the New Jersey Devils. Ken, Sunday was so fantastic. It was great to see you and your family out there. Congratulations. 40 years a Devil. Always a Devil. You're the greatest. Always appreciate our conversations. Thanks so much for stopping by today.
I really appreciate you having me, Jeff, and thank you for the kind words. And tell Louis I'm not fighting him anymore because he still looks in pretty darn good shape, so it's over.
I know. I've been on the road with him before, and I've worked out with him. Well, not worked with him. I've been in the gym on the floor at the same time as he is, and I don't want to go anywhere near Louis. I know what you're talking about. Ken, always a pleasure. Thanks, pal. You be good.
Have a great day, Jeff.
The great Ken Danico, analyst for the New Jersey Devils, celebrating 40 seasons as a New Jersey Devil, either on the ice or in the broadcast booth as well. Okay, so a couple of things to wrap up here. Mention the games on Sportsnet tonight. Just talked to Ken about the Vancouver Canucks and the New Jersey Devils. That one on 360 on Sportsnet Flames. It is Calgary and Seattle. Oilers face off against the Preds on Sportsnet 1, your early game on Sportsnet 360. The always entertaining New York Rangers, they're just, like, honestly, they're just flat out one of the funnest teams to watch in the NHL this season. They face off against the hardworking and surprising Philadelphia Flyers, who are getting some of the best goaltending around the NHL. A number of people to thank, starting with Ken Danico, whom you just heard from a second ago. Louis DeBrusque from Hockey Night in Canada, Mike Zeisberger in Finland, ahead of the Global Series, Columbus in Colorado. Thank you, Zeiss. And Elliot Friedman kicks off each and every broadcast. Matt Marchese, Lance Kennedy, Jen Rolnick, that is the crew. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Merrick's show returns tomorrow, noon Eastern, across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360.